Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf build specialist, hanging out in northwestern South Dakota. I am joined by Madison Corvana, SDSU Extension beef nutrition field specialist, and Madison will be my co-host for this episode. Our guest is Dr. Hannah Spear, and she's the assistant professor with Montana State University. So welcome to Cattle HQ, Hannah. We're glad to have you here.
Well, thanks, Robin, for inviting me. Happy to be here.
After listening to your presentation on your research related to vitamin A in the cow herd, and I got to listen to you during the Cattlemen's Academy, in Miles City, hosted by Montana State University Extension. And after I listened to your presentation, I knew I really wanted you on the episode for Cattle HQ. And so I'm so thankful that you agreed to do it. And then I have Madison on board with me, too, to be my co-host. With that, can you share some about yourself, where you came from and where you are now?
Yeah, of course. So I actually grew up in Southwest Kansas, so a small town in Southwest Kansas. It's big feedlot, big dairy country out there. So that's where I grew up. And then I went and did my undergraduate degree at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas, where I majored in animal science. And then from there, while I was taking my courses in undergrad, I thought nutrition was really cool. So I decided to go and pursue a master's, which I completed at K-State. And then from there, I branched out of Kansas and went to Nebraska for my PhD, which I got in ruminant nutrition last August. And I got my specialization in cow-calf nutrition and management. So that's my training. And now I am currently, I've been with Montana State University since January of this year, and I am an assistant professor, and I'm located actually off campus at the Northern Ag Research Center in Havre, Montana.
So I know when we were visiting in Miles City, you said you grew up in the feedlot world. Your master's program was more in the feedlot sector. And then if I remember correctly, and if I'm wrong, you just tell me I'm wrong. And then you, like you said, you branched out into Nebraska more into the cow-calf and forage range type environment. Is that right?
Yeah. So with my master's, it was actually, it was a lot of basic science. So I essentially did metabolism studies for my master's project. And then, you know, I kind of decided that extension or applied research was maybe something that I was more interested in. So that's where UNL came in, and it was a really good fit for me. And it was oddly enough, I actually worked with cows in both range, and I worked pretty extensively with cows that were being managed in dry lot as well. So that was something unique and different that I got to experience when I was at UNL as well.
So you got a pretty diverse background, which is great. Why we want you on this episode too. So like I said, while I was in Miles City, I got to listen to your presentation on vitamin A. And I was really intrigued by your presentation, and that's why I really wanted you here on our Cattle HQ podcast. And so let's kind of dive into vitamin A and maybe start with some of the basic information about vitamin A. But what feeds are naturally high in vitamin A?
Yeah, so with cattle, so in, just in general with vitamin A, there is what we call the preformed vitamin A that can be found in feed. So that's the form that can immediately be absorbed and used by the body. However, that is found in animal products, and we're not feeding that to cattle. So cattle really have to rely on forages to get their vitamin A in their diet. And it's also important that they get that in their diet because the body can't make that. So being a fat-soluble vitamin, vitamin A is actually highest in fresh green forages. So they're getting a lot of what's called what we call a vitamin A precursor. So beta carotene is the primary form of vitamin A that is coming from those feeds. So, and that's always going to be highest in our fresh green forages, because actually vitamin A is associated to some extent with chlorophyll in our forages. So the greener the forage, the fresher the forage, the higher the vitamin A content. So just in general, color can really tell you a lot about the vitamin A content that you see in your feedstuffs. Even a really good green hay, the reason I say fresh is because vitamin A and that beta carotene are actually very sensitive to things like heat and light and moisture. So depending on harvest conditions and storage conditions of that hay, the vitamin A content reduces quite significantly. So green is always good, but fresh and green is always better.
So, also, I believe let's talk a little bit about silage, and that silage is a bit higher in vitamin A than we anticipate. And can you explain why silage would be higher in vitamin A?
Yeah, so silage, it's kind of that intermediate in between fresh green forage and like a really good green hay in terms of vitamin A content. And that'll vary quite, the concentrations in that vary quite a bit as well, again, due to harvest conditions, storage conditions, and things like that. But actually, because silage is, if it's packed well and stored well, it should be in an oxygen limited environment. So you're actually preserving some of that beta carotene in that feedstuff because beta carotene is also very sensitive to things like oxygen. So it's very prone to oxidation. So if your silage storage conditions and you packed it well are really good, then vitamin A content, that could also be a pretty significant source of vitamin A for cattle in their diets.
Hey, this is Madison for just popping in. So
Yeah.
my voice gets a little bit different on the recording, but one of the things that I always find interesting with beta carotene coming in from diet is that inadvertently it can change fat color. So that's one of the things that I think producers are inadvertently more familiar with vitamin A than they maybe think, because if we have cows
Right.
grazing that fresh grass, that's where that yellow fat comes from. So it's kind of cool that you've seen, both sides of the coin so that you can kind of differentiate between, mature cows versus maybe something somewhere else.
Yeah, and so with cattle too, I know at least there's been a lot more work done in the dairy breeds, but there's actually an enzyme in their intestine that converts beta carotene to those usable forms of vitamin A in the body. And that enzyme is pretty inefficient in cattle, but there have been differences in like Jerseys and Holsteins. If you notice anything about Jersey milk fat color, it's typically more yellow compared to a Holstein. And that's because that enzyme, they've at least found that in dairy cattle, is significantly less efficient at converting that beta carotene. So more of it gets distributed into things like milk and fat. So yeah, it is interesting. And I should say too, beta carotene, it's what we think of when we see like red, orange, yellow pigments in feed. So I know it's kind of strange to say that it's found in large amounts in green forages. So we do get a little bit of carotene from, if we're feeding like corn, for example, it's obviously yellow, so it's got a lot. But just in general, grains and our grain byproducts aren't going to provide a significant amount of vitamin A to that cow's diet.
So, Hannah, you just shared the various feedstuff, and when it comes to the animal, vitamin A is stored in the liver, if I remember that correctly. But I know you mentioned during your presentation, you said, and I wrote this down, that it is tightly controlled by the body. What does that mean?
Yeah, so vitamin A, it actually acts like a lot of our trace minerals in the bloodstream. When we think about how it's that is regulated in the bloodstream. So because vitamin A has pretty important roles with immune function, reproduction, even like on a gene level, it can regulate gene expression. So we want that to be very tightly regulated. So that plasma level of or that blood level of vitamin A isn't going to fluctuate a ton. And I like to an analogy that actually Steph Hansen from Iowa State, I took a class with her, used that is really helpful in understanding how that's regulated is the liver's kind of the fuel tank and the bloodstream's kind of the fuel line. So the liver is used to kind of keep that vitamin A at a very tight level, or I guess I should say a pretty consistent level, and you really won't see that blood vitamin A drop or go down unless liver stores are completely tanked. So, yeah, it's very tightly regulated, and the liver, 90% of the body's vitamin A is stored in the liver. So that's primarily what the body's pulling from to maintain those levels in the plasma. So blood can be a useful tool to diagnose vitamin A status, but liver, and also the way that vitamin A is metabolized in the body as well, intake, or if we have higher vitamin A intakes, we won't really see a lot of fluctuation in the blood, but we will if we get to the livers, since that's where it's primarily stored. The liver's just used to kind of essentially keep vitamin A at a, or maintain a consistent level in the blood.
So you mentioned if anybody has a concern about a vitamin A deficiency, the liver would be something that they test, not the blood plasma, just like copper and some of those other ones, right?
And I'm not saying blood is not useful. It is, but it really tells you you're okay or you're not okay. And by that point, if you're at really low levels, then liver stores are probably pretty well depleted. So in my opinion, the liver gives you kind of a better picture of where that cow is at that point in time, since that's the one that kind of fluctuates with vitamin A, dietary vitamin A intake. But yeah, I would say the liver gives you a better idea of a cow status at a particular point in time versus, a blood sample.
So vitamin A does not transfer across the placenta, is that correct?
Yes.
So that means when that baby calf is born, that calf is actually deficient or void of vitamin A.
Correct.
So where is that calf getting that vitamin A then?
So the vitamin A that that calf is going to be getting is going to be coming in colostrum, which colostrum has a lot of other good things in it, but because vitamin A and just in general are fat soluble vitamins, don't transfer across that placenta. A lot of that is getting put, that vitamin A is getting put into the colostrum. So that's what that calf's really going to rely on after birth to kind of establish its own vitamin A stores and get that vitamin A that it needs.
So again, kind of referencing back to your presentation in Miles City, you mentioned that within the colostrum, 40% of the vitamin A comes from storage and 60% from the diet. Did I write that down right when I was
That
taking
is
notes?
correct.
I'm feeling pretty proud of my note taking here.
They're awesome.
So what does that mean? I mean, to for a producer, when it comes to feeding that cow or making sure that that vitamin A is sufficient enough to be transferred through the colostrum to that baby calf. Because I also believe within your research, you found that even though the cow had sufficient levels or adequate levels of vitamin A, that calf was actually deficient.
Yeah, so the one study you're referring to, we actually brought cows in to the dry lot. They had been out grazing summer pasture, and they came in with pretty good. We had tested their liver vitamin A levels, and they came in with pretty good stores. But when we supplemented them, we actually only supplemented about a third and two-thirds of that vitamin A, or the current vitamin A recommended amount. And what we did find is that at those lower vitamin A supplemental levels, because our theory kind of was, well, if the cow's got good vitamin A liver stores, the calves should be fine. But actually, what we found is that even though a lot of our cows still had good, adequate status 30 days after calving, the calves, about a majority of them fell about, they were. Their liver levels, based on what we know for current reference ranges that a lot of diagnostic labs use to define adequacy when looking at liver vitamin A concentrations, they were about half of what they should have been in order to be considered adequate based on liver vitamin A levels. So again, I think to your what you had mentioned earlier, it really emphasizes the point. We found some earlier literature from the 70s that actually looked at how much vitamin A is coming from the cow's own liver stores and how much is coming from her diet and going into that colostrum. And again, 60% was coming from the diet. So it's good for her to have good liver vitamin A stores to get vitamin A into the colostrum for that calf, but diet makes up 60% of that vitamin A as well. So it wasn't enough that those cows just came in with good vitamin A liver stores. We weren't supplementing them enough in their diet. So I think that's kind of the take home is that, yeah, liver stores are important for the cow to have, going into calving, but it's also important that she's getting enough from her diet as well, because both pools of vitamin A are going to be contributing that colostrum or that colostral vitamin A.
I think all the points that you're bringing up are things that, we always preach that better colostrum quality, and we always, want our cows to make the best that we can. But you kind of bring up the point of, they could come inadequate, but that diet during that, that month where they're really putting a lot of energy into making that colostrum really starts to raise its head a little bit of, we can't just say, well, they're good right now. And I also really liked the how you mentioned that the colostrum is important to the calf as setting that baseline. Because I mean, we're always talking to producers about making sure that calf gets colostrum as soon as possible, and also with just making sure that vitamin A is coming in adequately too. It's both sides of the coin. The colostrum can be, the best that we can, but if it's already lower than we need it to be, they're maybe not are going to get it all the stuff that they need. So I really liked how you packaged that up and really kind of pieced it apart like that. It really makes everything flow together super nicely and bringing in that last bit. But I had a question for you. So we talked about, I mean, you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier that we can put in supplements of vitamin A, but what are kind of maybe the easiest ways to increase vitamin A content in a diet outside of kind of our normal forage sources, I guess?
The best method, in my opinion, is just to do an in-feed supplement. So whether that's, a vitamin trace mineral package that you're feeding out in a loose mineral, or if you happen to be feeding a TMR, that's even great. You can work it into like a pellet or some other supplemental pellet or protein source that you might be given around that time as well. So I always say that getting it through the feed is probably the best option, in addition to the regular diet. And like I said, we've got some published values on what vitamin A content can be in our different feedstuffs, but that range is so variable because there's so many factors that can cause you to lose vitamin A activity essentially in your forages. So people rarely test for that. So definitely getting it in the feed, whether that's from a vitamin trace mineral, like loose mineral that you're feeding, or a supplemental pellet of some kind.
So when would that best time be, though, Hannah, in regards to thinking about colostrum, building that colostrum up, and to best benefit the calf at the end?
Yeah, so based on some of that research that I just shared with you, and also looking back and figuring out, oh, 60-40, 60 is coming from the diet and 40% vitamin A is coming from the cow's own stores. That kind of led us to think that maybe late gestation would probably be the key time to start thinking about looking hard at what your vitamin A program, or I guess your vitamin mineral program, but that might be a strategic time to, start upping the vitamin A, because looking at when, colostrum formation starts, it starts in those last few weeks before calving. So if we're targeting, it's important that the cow has good vitamin A status, but if we're thinking about it from the calf side of things, then late gestation would be a good time to start upping the vitamin A, especially I know most where I'm at now in Montana, majority of people are spring calving, so they're already feeding, stored feeds or maybe a TMR of some sort during that late gestation window. So that would, because they're getting less vitamin A in their diet, but also thinking about the calf, that late gestation would be a good time to think about, upping the vitamin A.
So what about injections of vitamin A, or like an injection that includes vitamin A? And I'm just curious on not maybe your, what are your thoughts? Maybe some, benefits, concerns, those kinds of things.
Yeah, so injections, there's vitamin A injectable products, and typically they do come with like a vitamin D, or maybe it's an A, D, and E shot as well. I always say that those are a good tool to have in the toolbox. If you had like a tough summer, it was a drought, and you maybe fed hay a lot longer than you wanted to, and maybe they didn't eat a lot of supplement, that it's vitamin A is really good in emergencies of like we're approaching a severe deficiency and we need to get those stores boosted quickly, because with an injectable, you're actually bypassing, the rumen, the gut. And it's going directly into the bloodstream. So it's a very available source of vitamin A. And it can boost cal stores pretty quickly within a few days up to a couple of weeks. And so that would be a good situation to maybe think about using an injectable. I've heard also a lot of people have just made it a standard procedure to give an injectable vitamin product when the calf's born, especially if you've gone through, like a tough summer, or you had to feed maybe some lower quality feeds. It's always a good thing to have in case of an emergency, but I always, my vote's always to get them, get it in the feed daily, so you don't get those situations where you might have a severe deficiency on your hands. But again, injectables, they're a good tool to have, but I wouldn't use them either as a sole source of vitamin. Because, I mean, if you think about the time and the labor that goes into rounding all your cows up to give them an injection every couple of months, because that's about how long liver stores last when you give one of those products, it's a significant time investment, and money-wise, it could add up on you as well. So, yeah. Definitely wouldn't advocate for using them as your sole source of vitamin A coming into the cow, but it's good to have in emergencies like that.
One question I was going to ask for you, Hannah, is we talked about, we have to include it in the diet and the injections work, but we shouldn't make them our whole game plan. They shouldn't be our only play in the playbook. But is there ever a concern of vitamin A overdosing, or is there, a certain level that we can get to where we might see some negative effects, or is that maybe not as much of a concern, in the diet form at least,
Yeah.
more of a concern the other way?
That's a good question. So, because vitamin A is a fat soluble vitamin, in other species, you can feed too much at once and start causing some toxicity issues. But with cattle and all the reading that I've done, I have not ever come across a case of vitamin A toxicity, at least in cattle. So, and that's because there is some, the form of vitamin A that they typically put in our supplements, there is some rumen degradation that happens with that. And in addition to that, the cow's body is pretty good at regulating. So if liver stores are kind of approaching maximal capacity, then the body will kind of start to excrete more, because there's some regulation mechanisms going on that say, we've got enough. We don't need any more. So more vitamin A will be excreted and less will be stored. So in the case of providing it in the feed, no, you'd have to feed really, really large amounts, which most people don't do because it's not cost effective to do that. But with injectables, I also haven't heard of cases of toxicity, but something that I've learned recently about vitamin or injectable vitamin products is that there can be some anaphylaxis. So your cows could potentially experience, it doesn't happen that often, but it's always a risk with any injection that you give, really. But with those vitamin, injectable vitamin products, there's been some cases reported of anaphylactic shock. And I've talked to different vets about that. I'm like, well, what's causing that? Some suspect that maybe there's, another nutrient deficiency going on, and you've kind of overloaded the system now with a lot of vitamin A, or a lot of vitamin in general. So the cow's body just kind of doesn't know how to deal with that much that quickly. They could be There could be some underlying disease that you don't know about. And again, just overwhelming the immune system. I talked to another vet that said, well, we typically give, if we're giving vitamin A injectables, we're usually giving it along with a vaccine or something like that. So again, just overloading the immune system with too much, like, vaccine, vitamins. Another theory is that the carriers that some of those, so the liquid that is used to carry those vitamins in that injectable product can maybe cause some sort of adverse reaction in the cows. Nobody really knows, but it's definitely a risk. But like I said, it doesn't happen that often, but it's just something to be aware of when you're giving those injectable vitamin products.
You were saying, just to kind of refresh my memory, Hannah, though, that you said that some producers are giving the baby calves at birth. Is that correct? Also, okay. So that's excellent. I guess I am actually thinking we are going to be wrapping up this episode of Cattle HQ, but Hannah, any last things on any of your research projects? I know that you've done quite a bit within the world of vitamin A, and we just really touched the surface of some of the things that you did. But is there anything else you want to share with the producers, the listeners of our podcast?
Yeah, so a lot, like I said, a lot of my work was actually with cows that were managed in dry lot situations, and that was another one of my projects that I did, was looking at, different supplemental amounts of vitamin A, because we had a theory that the current vitamin A recommendations maybe weren't correct for those cows that are getting, stored feedstuffs for extended periods of time throughout the year. They don't have that ability to build those stores compared to cows that might be out on fresh green grass. So, for kind of that work suggested to us too that maybe those cows in those situations where you have extended feeding of, stored forages or extended time in a dry lot, that you actually might need to feed about 3 times of what the current recommended amount is, which is about 100,000 IUs per day. And we saw too that it helped increase those cows' liver stores, and also we saw those calves that received, or those calves from the cows that received about 3 times the current recommended amount, also had increased liver vitamin A stores at 30 days of age. So again, it kind of reiterates that we can kind of influence vitamin A status of the calf through what we supplement the cow, and also we needed to feed about, 100,000 IUs per day to get those cows that have been in this dry lot. And these are cows that were managed in the dry lot 365 days a year. So they were, it was a total confinement system, which kind of is maybe the extreme of when we think about when people or how long people would normally dry lot cows. So yeah, that's kind of another thing too, is that maybe those current recommendations we have for vitamin A, we need to think about the diet that the cow's been on, what she is on, and maybe adjust our supplemental recommendations given those factors, because currently we don't have a lot of data to support or data to support that just one vitamin A recommendation is applicable across many different production systems and many different or and with modern beef cattle, because that recommendation hasn't been updated since 1976. So
Yeah, one more thought, Robin. I know we're butting up against the time, so don't send me a nasty email after this. I may just go over on time. But one thing that I think we're moving more towards, just as a cattle industry in general, is cattle being in dry lot situations longer than maybe traditionally they have been before, just simply due to land constraints, grazing constraints, all of the things. We are maybe moving more towards a dry lot cow system. I know there's quite a few producers that are moving that way, just simply more towards that confined animal feeding operation with their cows. So it's a good point that you brought up, that it's a completely different management strategy, and we really need to take it further outside of just maybe the normal things we think about. So I think the kind of challenging those recommendations with different management choices is a good place to put ourselves as we move forward with how the industry is changing.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Madison, I'm cutting you off. No nasty gram for me. I appreciate you being my co-host, so I would never do that. So just a quick recap, and if I say something wrong, Hannah, please make sure you correct me. But basically, with vitamin A, it's stored in the liver, and that vitamin A does not transfer through the placenta to the fetus. So it's really important that producers are focusing on making sure that their cows have vitamin A, like you said, most likely through the feed is the best option at late gestation, so that colostrum is built up with vitamin A, so that when that calf starts suckling, when it hits the ground, it's getting its vitamin A that it needs, because when it's being born, it's actually void or deficient of vitamin A. So I said that all right? Awesome. So those are just a few recaps, and then like she shared that, these are all data from 1976. I didn't write that number down.
Yep,
So,
the most recent study was done in 1970, and it was used to set the 76 recommendations.
that's telling us there's a lot more research that needs to be done based on what Hannah shared with us, and that maybe those requirements aren't quite right yet. So, especially as Madison shared, then in all the various production systems that we have for our cow-calf world. So, well, Hannah, thank you so very much. Any last-minute thoughts you want to share with us?
No, I don't think so. I appreciate you inviting me to be on here, and thank you for coming to my talk at the Cattle Academy. That was I was excited to be here. It's, vitamin A is something I never thought I'd be passionate about, but here
Well, you made me passionate about it, and I am not
I
even a nutrition person. I love repro, but for
am.
a cow to get pregnant, she needs vitamin A. So
Right.
I guess what is the saying? We always say that repro is more important than nutrition, and then Madison will fight back and say nutrition is better, more important than repro. So I think we're all important. So, well, thank you, Hannah, and thank you, Madison, for being my co-host on this episode. Before we end this episode of Cattle HQ, I want to give a shout out to the upcoming Cattle HQ Live monthly webinar sessions that SDSU Extension will be hosting. If you have an interest in our live webinars, go to our Extension website to register, and that's extension.sdstate.edu, and just do a search for Cattle HQ Live. So once again, this has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, it takes less muscles to smile than to frown.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.